Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and 30-day free trial at audibletrial.com/bookshow. Then go over to morbidlybeautiful.com as we are now part of the Morbidly Beautiful Podcasting Network.
It's alive!
Everybody here dies by dawn.
Dead by dawn!
Welcome to the Spook Show. Hello, welcome back to the All-American Spook Show podcast. I'm Josh, and as always, I'm joined here with Donnie.
Yo.
Tiana.
Hey.
And the Professor Smoke.
What's up?
This week, we let every other week, we all rotate and we choose a movie. And it was Tiana's choice. And the only criteria was obviously horror, but beyond that, it had to be an older horror. So, Tiana, what are we watching this week?
I chose Phantasm 2.
So, literally, we found 100 episodes to the number later from when we watched the first Phantasm, all the way back in episode 105. Now, here in episode 205, we're watching Phantasm 2 from 1988. We totally did not plan that. Like, that just, Tiana picked it out of a hat of, like, this is what I want to see. We're watching it. And what do you know, serendipity yet again, right, Smoke, that we're on somewhat of an anniversary. Here we go again.
Yeah. When exactly 100 years. Exactly 100 years.
It only feels like 100 years sometimes. It was 100 episodes ago.
Yeah.
Now, as far as like the anniversary dates and all that, this came out July 8th of 1988. So we're far away from that. You know, at least we didn't randomly trip on that
stumble
one. But the episode thing, that was crazy because we totally did not plan that. But, and like I said last episode, we also like to look at it like it's anything but getting back to the Hellraiser franchise sometimes, because that's kind of the franchise that we've been working through literally over the last 2 or 3 years, slowly but surely. And we just can't seem to shake this fucking thing. But every once in a while, we dip into other shit just so we don't have to watch that. And this is, you know, I guess this is kind of our, you know, now, I guess 100 episodes later, this is kind of the other series that we're dipping in and out of to avoid Hellraiser just a little bit longer. But I'm sure at some point we'll get back on that sooner or later. And then, of course, before you know it, coming up pretty soon, it's a little tease. We'll have our big summer event. We'll be ready to tell you what that's going to be, what, next month? No. But yeah, maybe by the end of April, but definitely by the beginning of May, we'll tell you what's going to be going on, because it will start on Memorial Day. So you want to keep your eyes and ears peeled for what the big Spook Show summer event is going to be. And trust me, it's going to be something different. Something similar, but something different. I'll leave it there for now.
Sure.
Before we get started, though, we want to go ahead and toss out the usual information. Go check out everything that we do over at aaspookshow.com. From there, you can go to all of our past podcast archives. You can also go to our YouTube page, where every month we have Video Vortex, Grindhouse Gutter, Hammer Horror Order series every week, every month. And we also upload podcast episodes there. So if you don't listen to it here, wherever you normally listen to, you know, your podcast at, you can check them out there as well. And we also encourage you to become a patron, help out the show by going over to patreon.com/aaspookshow. Every month you get a video minisode, which includes the Library of the Professor. Every month you get a new episode of Crafterpiece Theater. If you've ever voted on one of those polls, you owe it to us to go become a patron, help us out, and listen to these episodes, because I think we're up to what? Currently, Crafterpiece number 25 is coming out at the end of this week. And so that means there's 24 prior dumps that live over on Patreon. So as much as we hate watching most of the movies that we've watched there, trust me, you want to go listen to Crafterpiece Theater, because they are hilarious, if nothing else, right? There's fun to be had, just maybe not for us having to watch the movies, right? So to do that, go to patreon.com/aaspookshow.
It's always more fun talking about the movie than it is watching it, because we're usually not watching it together. We're in our own just suffering and misery.
Yeah. These aren't watch-alongs. This is like, let's talk about it after the fact. So it's a post-mortem, right? So
this is
the only chance we have to vent about having to watch these pieces of shit. So they usually turn into a gripe fest, right, Smoke? Smoke's dead.
gonna have to end it there.
Smoke's dead. He was thinking about all the Crafterpiece episodes and he died.
No, we had dogs having issues with each other, you know, barking like that and shit. So I'll try to mute it before that happens. But then inevitably, though, as soon as I do that, that's going to be a toss to me.
They're fussing and bitching because they're thinking about when you guys have to watch Craps or Peace Theater. That's what the problem was. So, but anyways, yeah. So I guess that's enough. So go check out aaspookshow.com. Everything can be found there in one easy to navigate place. So go check it out. And we'll go ahead and toss to the trailer for Phantasm 2.
Phantasm. The delusion of a disordered mind. A phantom. A spirit. A ghost. For 10 years, the secret of Perigord Cemetery has remained a mystery. Now, 3 innocent people are about to discover the ultimate evil.
You think that when you die, you go to heaven? You come to us.
We've got to warn people.
This summer, the ball is back. Phantasm 2.
It's only a dream.
It's a dream.
No, it's not.
Rated R.
All right, there you go. That's the trailer for Phantasm 2. I guess, Tiana, you chose it, so what's your history with it? I'm sure you've seen this at least a couple times, right?
Yeah, I used to run it back in the day. It just kind of blows my mind that it took almost 10 years for the sequel to come out.
Yeah, that was what, 1979, I think?
79 was the first one.
So yeah, 9 years. Like you said, almost 10 years before they... Now, I saw something about it was basically Don Coscarelli, who, you know, this is his baby, right? He producer, writer, director, everything with his... Apparently, the reason it took him this long is because he never could think of a good idea to do it. You know, even though people were kind of calling for it throughout those years, he just could never come up with a good concept to do it. And then finally, I saw something where it was this novel approach of, wait a minute, you mean we can just pick up the sequel basically directly where I left the last one off? Let's do it. It's funny that it took that novel approach to get him to finally do it.
Yeah. It's funny because I think Texas Chainsaw Massacre was 10 years, and they both movies used that in their promotional, like, you know, after 10 years of silence, the buzz is back was like a tagline for Chainsaw 2. And then I think I saw a poster or a tagline with Phantasm 2 that says about the same thing like that. Something along the lines of after 10 years of silence, the ball is back.
Yeah. I sent you guys, I have a picture. I actually have a promotional button, you know, like a button that you pin on your shirt or wherever the fuck. But it's huge. Yeah. It's not like a normal size shirt button or vest button. This thing is like half the size of my fucking face. It's huge. I'm holding it up right now, but this is it, and I'll post a picture on our social so everybody can see it. But I randomly found this for like $1 somewhere years ago, but it's got the sphere, you know, with the drills and the claws sticking out. And it says Phantasm 2 real big in the middle, and then on the bottom in red, this summer the ball is back. It's a cool little random thing to have, right? Stuff like that. But hey, Smoke, I'm sure you got tons of it, right?
I got one of those, like you were talking about that button for Trauma, the Dario Argento film.
Uh-huh.
Back at that 1992 convention, Weekend of Horrors convention I went to, they were, I don't know what the deal was with the giant oversized bins.
Yeah, like,
because you definitely wouldn't, like, put it on your jean jacket or something.
No, it's too big to, like, wear it or anything. Like, it'd start weighing you down. The funny thing is I have this, and I've had this for a while, and I've never watched this fucking movie until right now. This is the first time I've ever watched it. I'd only seen the first one a couple times and never watched this one or any of the other ones, so this will all be fairly new territory. I mean, obviously, I'm familiar with the tall man and the concept of the movies, just for whatever reason, never got around to watching them. Donnie, what about you?
So I'm actually a fan of the first three movies. I am actually a fan of. Mm-hmm.
And there's only been five, so it's not like you've missed that
much. Yeah, yeah. So, but I haven't seen anything past 4. So when I'm sorry, I haven't seen anything past three. I've seen the first three, and that's,
so whenever we do Phantasm 3 on episode 305, then then after that we'll pick up every 2 years, right?
Yeah, I guess so. I guess we'll.
Smoke, what about you? How many times? I would assume you've seen this, but so how many times?
Yeah, same thing. But like Tiano saying back in the day, video rentals, and then I don't know, maybe 5-6 times. I've probably seen it over the years, somewhere in that range.
So we get that pretty much the majority of everyone has watched it a number of times, and I'm the only one that's kind of the fresh take here. So that will give you an interesting look at the end to see what we all rate it and what we all think about it, since this was, I'm the newbie here. But we'll go ahead and get into some of the background information before we do all that. I only found one alternate title, but actually, officially, I found one alternate title, but on the back of that, which I don't have it beside me here, on the back of the Blu-ray set that I had for this, it says Phantasm 2. I think it said The Ball Is Back. But I didn't find where that was ever like an official title for anything. So I don't know if it's ever been referenced before that DVD set or anything like that, that Phantasm 2, The Ball Is Back. But the only official alternate title I saw was from Australia. It was called Phantasm 2, The Never Dead Part 2. So I'm assuming that means that the first Phantasm was called The Never Dead in Australia. So they call this Phantasm 2, The Never Dead Part 2. That's a mouthful, right?
It's got two in the sequel, like twice. Two times the sequel.
Yeah, well, sequel is the word of the day. Trust me, you will understand what I'm about to go through here in just a few minutes. But this movie was released July 8th, 1988, produced by Spacegate Productions, Starway International, Inc., and Universal Pictures, and distributed by Universal Pictures. Of course, it's rated R with a total runtime of 1 hour and 37 minutes. On IMDb, it's listed as an action, fantasy, horror. It was filmed around the Los Angeles, California area, give or take around December of 1987, for a budget of $3 million. Now, you know, for some of the movies that we hear, that's, you know, that's kind of low, but some movies back then, that's probably about right. But I saw some notes somewhere where apparently, looking back on the 80s, that everything Universal had their hands on, this was the lowest budget they ever gave to anything they released throughout the entire decade of the 80s. $3 million was all they gave to this movie. But ironically, it's also the highest budget Phantasm movie out of all five of them.
Yeah, I saw that.
For only $3 million, they made this, but this was probably by far the highest amount of money Coscarelli ever had to do any of the other Phantasm movies. It went on to a worldwide gross of $7.2 million, which I guess is successful enough, but definitely not considered a roaring success, right? And I believe this was the last one as well that got released, had a got like a wide theatrical release, I should say, because the last one, Phantasm 5, I think it was called Ravager, that one did get released in theaters, but I believe it was kind of like a limited release, probably one just like Phantom, what do they call that? Phantom? Is that what it's called? Fathom. Probably one of those Fathom events, I bet. I don't know that.
Oh, yeah.
I think it was a very low, you know, theater count for that, but the other two, 3 and 4, went straight to video. So this was the last one, essentially, they got released in theaters. When we have it, we like to point it out, and this is another good one. The top 10 in the box office for the weekend that it came out of July 8th to the 10th of 1988. Now, remember my mention a few minutes ago about sequels? Get ready. Number 14, I'm not going to go through all of them, but I'll start at 14 because it's important. Rambo 3. Sequel, right? Or I guess threequel, however you want to look at it. Number 10, The Great Outdoors. Awesome. Fucking classic, awesome comedy movie. Number nine, in its opening weekend, Phantasm 2 came in at a little over $3 million. So clearly it made most of its money right there in the opening weekend. Number 8, Crocodile Dundee 2. That's the third sequel that's out this particular weekend in 88. Number 7, Short Circuit 2. That's the fourth sequel that's playing this particular weekend. Number 6, License to Drive. I think that's one of the Corey's movies, right? Wasn't that Corey Haim with him? Number 5, another baseball classic, Bull Durham. Number 4, another classic, Tom Hanks, Big. One of his best. One of my favorite Tom Hanks movies. Number 3, Arthur 2, On the Rocks. The fifth sequel of this particular weekend that's playing. That's where the sequel stuff stops, because the two big movies that weekend were number 2, Who Framed Roger Rabbit? And number 1, in its second week. Coming to America, the Eddie Murphy classic, was the king of the box office. But that was a big, big weekend for sequels, obviously. But just a big weekend for movies. I mean, some bona fide classics playing, right?
Yep.
And I didn't even mention Willow was still playing at the time.
Which we absolutely have to get to that one.
Yeah, that's cult
corner. That's more cult corner.
Yeah, for sure. Even though that's a loose classification of cult, right? But I think as far as like where we watch movies, that's really the only place.
Yeah.
But you can say that's kind of, you know, I think it was successful enough. I think now it's kind of like it's a cult classic in that people like to go back and revisit the movie kind of thing. So that's where it'll fall in. But yeah, I found it hilarious when I was looking through this earlier. I'm like, Jesus, all these sequels. So clearly, smoke around 88 when all Hollywood started like, well, we don't have running out of ideas. Let's crank up the sequel machine. And then it never stopped.
Yeah, never. So well, then they moved to like in the late 90s and early 2000s to the remake.
Yeah, they really like then they started to tap the sequel well dry. So then they just started rebooting everything. And that truly is where it's never stopped. Now we're in the era of franchises, right? Where you're just going to a shared universe franchise is what I meant.
Yeah, and there's something about, like, nowadays, I don't know if y'all notice a lot of this, is the trilogy. Like, they will announce that it's going to be a trilogy right from the beginning. Like, we're going to have three of these movies come out. I mean, back then, they just, like, hoped that they'd make some money enough that, okay, this movie made enough money, we'll make a sequel, see if we can make more money. But now they just announce, you know, trilogy or whatever.
And I go back to Phantasm. Like, what I said, Coscarelli never envisioned this to be a thing. Like, I think he made the first one. It was like, well, that's it. Time to go do something else. And then it's, you know, time went on, right? And then he ended up making four more, you know, for a total of five. But he never intended in 1979 for this to be a franchise and I guess be the thing that everybody remembers him for forever and ever. But here we are.
Well, there's a little thing also called the Beastmaster. I tried to squeeze it in there a few places, I think. I put it on the corner wheel at least once.
Yeah, it also made me think just now when you were talking about when you mentioned where they make something and kind of announce that it's going to be a trilogy before they even know, you know, right? The first thing that popped in my head when you said that was The Exorcist, this last one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
And now that seems like it's already been scrapped, right? Like,
they cursed themselves. Oh, we're going to have a trilogy. This is going to be great.
Yeah. They paid ass load of money to get the rights to do it and everything. And then. If you want to hear our true thoughts on that one, you have to go all the way back to episode 181. That's a
the craps are
no, it's not. It's a regular episode. That was a doozy. A doozy, I tell you. Go check that one out. Anyways, back to the background stuff. One interesting thing, you know, before we get into directors and stars and all that stuff, one interesting note, you know, the younger guy in this one was recast. But this is the only one where they recast it. Because remember in the first movie, the younger kid, his name's Mike, he was played by A. Michael Baldwin in the first movie. And then for this one, they recast it and gave it to James LaGrosse, or LaGrosse, however you say his last name. I think it's LaGrosse, G-R-O-S. So apparently that's forever and ever been kind of universally like shit on, that decision to do it. But essentially, from what I read, the decision was Universal's. Because A. Michael Baldwin was not an active actor at the time. He'd only done like one or two other things after the first Phantasm and just kind of, I guess, got out of the business or whatever he was doing, right? Maybe he went to school and went to travel the world. Who knows what he was doing? So because he wasn't an active actor at the time, Universal didn't want him coming back. So they get James LaGrosse to do it. The rest is history. Now, he came back after this, though, because he plays Mike going into the future for the following three movies. He came back, but this is the one random movie where he's recast, you know, so I guess the point is if you're sitting there watching all five movies back to back, you'd be like, why is he not in that one movie? What the fuck happened there? That's what it was. Universal.
Did you know that it was almost Brad Pitt?
Yeah, that was another.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Brad Pitt auditioned to play Mike. How old? Now, I didn't go back and see. How old would he have been? He had to have been extremely young. I mean, you're talking like this movie was filmed in 1987, late 87.
Cutting class.
He'd have been 25.
Okay. Not quite as young as I thought he would have been, but still.
Mm, yeah.
Boy, they missed the boat on that one, huh?
Yeah.
You could have had Brad Pitt attached to this thing and sold the fuck out of it forever and ever. Amen. Or James LaGrosse. And then then you just have to throw it in with the other Phantasm movies as a box set. That's about it. Then Right Smoke, you can imagine the late 90s covers. Where
oh, yeah.
It just would have been Brad Pitt's face. That's it. You know, oh, yeah, by the way, Phantasm 2.
Yeah, the way they did. I can't remember. Who was in Critters? It was a Critters movie that had somebody in it.
Leonardo
DiCaprio. They capitalized on that, too.
Just like Texas Chainsaw with McConaughey and Zellweger. And, you know, there's tons of others.
Yeah.
Leprechaun with Jennifer Aniston.
Yeah. They just randomly made me think of Leprechaun in the Hood.
Yeah, you're welcome.
So it was produced, directed, and written by Don Cascarelli. It stars James LaGrosse as Mike. You may recall his face from Near Dark. Small role in Batteries Not Included. He was in Point Break. And he's been in tons of TV and movies, you know, as a character actor, but nothing probably on this big of a star scale, I wouldn't think. Reggie Bannister reprises his role as Reggie, the original character naming there for old Reggie. He is best known for this series. He's in all five Phantasm movies. But he was also in Silent Night, Deadly Night 4, Initiation, and he was at least in the first Wishmaster movie. So he is a familiar face from other things that people of this would have probably wanted to check out, and probably movies that we will check out here eventually, right? Donnie, I'm sure you can't wait for Silent Night, Deadly Night 4, Initiation.
Yes.
I've never seen that one, but it's got to be terrible. It's got to be fucking bald. It's got to be. Angus Scrimm reprises his role as the Tall Man, best known for this series, all five movies. But I did not recall this right away when I saw it, but he had a small role in Chopping Mall. And we did that one a while back, but I don't remember Angus Scrimm being in it. So it must have been a bit part that he was in it. He was also in Subspecies. Unfortunately, he passed away back in 2016, but basically right around the same time that the fifth Phantasm Ravager movie came out, he had passed. Paula Irvin as Liz. She's also has a small role in part three of this series. And really, other than that, because not long after this, she just quit the business. She went on to just, you know, live her life, right? Do other things, went back to school or something like that. But she had a really long run in the soap opera Santa Barbara back in the mid-90s. So you might recall her from that. Samantha Phillips as Alchemy. That's her name, Alchemy. She may be remembered from Dollman, but one I'm sure Donnie remembers her best from would be Weekend at Bernie's 2.
Just the exhale of
Yeah. What? Not the first one. The horrible second one. Weekend at Bernie's 2. And I think she was, you might, actually, Donnie, I take it back. You might remember her. I think she was in some Penthouse videos and stuff. And maybe just from replaying the Reggie sex scene over and over again. Maybe remember that.
But it's actually, I heard that his wife was actually on set for that day.
Is that why, it's not the worst sex scene we've even seen here on the show. There's some bad ones we've seen here in some of these movies, right? It's a pretty bad one, though, because really it's just like her riding him like she's riding a horse, like a bucking bronco, and she's slapping him in his bald head and just laughing. You can tell this had to have been like a one-shot deal. Like, you know what? Like, we're only going to do this once, so just have fun with the kids. Yeah. She's just riding him and slapping him in the head and shit. It's ridiculous. Like a lot of points in this movie, it's silly and ridiculous. That as far as background stuff, that's all I had. I mean, did y'all have anything you want to point out before we get into it?
So, yeah. So the United States Conference of Catholic Bishops, they objected to the movie's release because the Catholic bishops, called it morally offensive.
I like when those kind of things happen because that means they had to sit around and watch it.
That's rich.
They're not just assuming it. That means they had to watch it. So that is hilarious. What would they take except? I mean, other than the violence and everything, you're right. You know, what in particular do you think they would have taken exception to the cross hanging them up by a cross?
Well, maybe that, or you know, that
drilling a priest,
you know, the ear where they, you know, they kill that priest,
launching a spear at him and drilling a hole in his head, Phantasm. And then the blood squirting out of his head.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure that probably did it.
That
How about digging up of the bodies?
You mean like what they what they did to the bodies?
Yeah.
That probably too. I was thinking also like maybe some of the comments by the tall man, like, you think you go to heaven, but you come to us, you know, that kind of stuff. I'm sure some of those lines didn't endear them. Now that I think of it, this entire movie probably didn't endear itself to to the Catholic Church.
Well, we are in the midst of Satanic Panic at that time, too.
Yeah, you're kind of late in the process here, right? You're right in the thick of it, right?
Yeah, you had the, like I said, well, you had the crackdown, too. We talked about this before. It was around this time that you had that crackdown on slasher violence, anyway. From, like, the Friday the 13th movies and that, and the Nightmare on Elm Street, the later ones were kind of bloodless, really.
Mm-hmm.
They weren't when they made them, but they ended up, MPAA had to, they had to take it back and forth to the MPAA 3, 4, 5 times, whatever, to keep trimming stuff out of it, so it basically ended up being almost bloodless.
I did see something where there was something with this one where they had to do that. I don't know if they actually submitted it to the MPAA and then it came back as like X-rated, but apparently there is a work print out there somewhere.
Oh, yeah.
That has a lot of the uncut stuff from it, and they're like, yeah, this would have got an X rating had it not been edited down. Because it was basically, it read to me, it was like there was more blood. You know, like the scene where the sphere is in the priest's head and the blood squirting out. Apparently, that was supposed to be even bloodier than it ended up being.
I'm pretty sure I had that. I talked about the bootlegging or the, they called it the gray market back then, where tape trading and stuff was, that was a big thing back then, was the work print. Because of this issue with the MPAA making them cut all the stuff out, you go look up, find these catalogs or whatever, and there would be this or that work print. You know, it would have no sound effects, it would have the dialogue, but no music. It's a work print, but they would sell because of how many cuts that were getting, all the stuff that was getting taken out of these movies.
Yeah. Yeah. Basically, what I gathered from the bit that I read about it was just, it had a lot more gore, a lot more blood. So they had to go back and like kind of trim that down a lot, So even as gory and bloody as it is, there would have been even more, And you remember when we did the first Phantasm movie, we talked about that, how like the original cut of that movie was 3 hours long. And maybe that explained why the movie didn't make sense, because, they had to pare it down to 90 minutes and it's fucking wackadoo because it makes no sense. It's surreal, which was my main beef with that movie.
I would be one that would watch that. I like, hey, give me that 3 hour cut. I want to check that out.
I would definitely like to see it just to see, the longer cut, but like, it's not something I would like, oh fuck, give it to, pump it in my veins. I got to see the 3 hour Phantasm, but I would watch it, at least for our purposes, right? I'd watch it for the spook show. I don't know if it's something I would pine for, but it'd be cool to see, just see what Coscarelli's original concepts were, and it probably would make a whole hell of a lot more sense than the final cut did. Boy, oof. That one's something.
Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
Delicious things to eat.
The popcorn can't be beat.
The sparkling drinks are just dandy. The chocolate bars and the candy. So let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat. Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
For you, the listeners of the All-American Spook Show podcast, Audible is offering a free audiobook download with a free 30-day trial to give you the opportunity to check out their service. So I went over to audible.com and I just typed in Phantasm to see what would pop up. It would be awesome if it was a book about aluminum foil or something, right? But it's not. Let's see. We've got there's a Phantasm series that looks like he obviously has nothing to do with the Phantasm movies, but it's Phantasm book 1 and 2. I see here Phantasm and Ice K Lit RPG. So I guess it's like an RPG type story. This one is 11. The first one is 11 and a half hours long. The second one's 13 and a half hours long.
Jesus.
Those are both by Christopher Hall and Max Lex. So those are both there. There might be more of those, but I just see the first. Well, I see at least a fourth. So there's at least four of them there. I also see Phantasm Exhumed, The Unauthorized Companion by Dustin McNeil. And he wrote a couple of books about the Phantasm series. So if any of that floats your boat, because that would probably be actually pretty interesting to take a deep dive into the series, right? They're available to you over at Audible. You can find one, get one for free right now by going to audibletrial.com/bookshow. Again, that's audibletrial.com/bookshow for your free audiobook. So I'm going to hop back over to IMDb and I'm going to click on plot summary. See if we have a really long one so we can explain it for Donnie's purposes, of course. Yeah, we, you know, they're not crazy long like last week, but we've got a couple here. So the brief one is Mike, now released from a psychiatric hospital, meets with Reggie and discover his dreams, the events of the original film, are real. And they both journey to find and stop the evil tall man from his grim work. We'll go to the longest one here, which was submitted by, well, I'm sure this will read well, Claudio Carvola from Rio de Janeiro, Brazil. Reggie rescues Mike from the dwarves and saves him from the tall man blowing up his house. Mike is interned in a mental institution, and 7 years later, he convinces his psychiatrist that he is sane. Mike meets Reggie, and they team up to hunt down the tall man through the country. Mike also dreams on Liz, who also know that the tall man does exist. Meanwhile, in Perigord, Liz's grandfather dies, and she stays with her grandmother. When her grandma is abducted by the tall man, she goes to the mortuary to look for her, which is what one would do. However, Mike and Reggie have met the young woman Alchemy hitchhiking on the road while hunting down the tall man, and they head to Perigord. Now they will have their showdown in Perigord. They threw the word Perigord in there 8 times. I don't know why, but the only thing I could think of, Donnie, when I saw the sign and they talked about going to Perigord, where was Perigord? What state was it in? Do you remember?
Virginia, wasn't it?
No, it was on the other side of the country. It was in Oregon. Or, as Andrew Dice Clay would say, Oregon.
Oregon. God.
It was in Perigord, Oregon.
Ah, God.
Because everybody knows.
I'd say Oregon is awesome, though.
I bet. Yeah, maybe even Perigord, if that's a real place, and I highly doubt it. But then again, even in the movie, I don't think I'd want to visit there. It looked like a shit show. Well, where do we start? Where do we start with old Phantasm 2 here? I think you just start from the fact that it picks up at the very end of the first one. Where, hold on before you guys say anything. I don't remember if we've mentioned it here on this episode or not, but we are a spoiler-filled podcast. So if you've never seen, honestly, at this point, I'm going to say if you've never seen the first Phantasm, much less the second one that we're here to talk about today, you probably want to go ahead and hit pause, go watch the two movies, and then come back because we're getting into spoiler territory now, and we don't want to ruin it for you. So go check them out, come back, we'll be here waiting. But this movie picks up from the very end of the first movie where, you know, Mike's brother has died and now they're like the family friend or whatever. Reggie has kind of is like, all right, let's pack our bags. We're just going to head out. I'm going to take you on. You have no family. You'll live with me now. And we're just going to go somewhere. So go get your bags and let's go. And that's basically kind of how the first movie ends. Right. And then there's the part where the tall man comes in the mirror, boy, and then leaps out of the mirror, right, and pulls him in, right? That's the end of the first one. Well, you pick up pretty much right from this moment right here where now the dwarves have come into the house. And now, Donnie, explain the dwarves.
In the series, no.
The dwarves. Smoke, you want to take a stab at it? Explain the dwarves.
I mean, they basically... Yeah, go ahead.
Going into the original Phantasm, yeah, it's got to be... We've talked about this. It must be a little bit of influence from Star Wars, right?
Yeah, what the?
In their design, at least in the first movie, but I think they were enslaving. I can see it was enslaving people, like, yeah, putting, for whatever reason, putting them in these compact bodies to enslave them, bring them to this planet to do whatever.
If that sounds like it makes no sense, it fucking don't. From the first one to this one now, it makes no fucking sense, right? And I love, and I enjoy this movie enough, and I enjoy the first one, but that makes no fucking sense. They take dead bodies, and I guess people that are alive that they kill, and then they basically turn them into midgets. They turn them into little people, like demon ghouls, right? And then they just chuck them into this other plane of existence, this other dimension, to do God knows what.
If they had the spaceship, maybe he had to go through space or whatever. They needed a compact size. They got to put him in little midget bodies and put him in these little canisters, right? But he's not. He's an alien from another planet, I guess. But he uses portals. So why do you need to compact him down? I don't know. But make an interesting visual reference, I guess.
Maybe there's only so much room on this other planet or other plane of existence, whatever the fuck this is. I think it's like what do they call that? Dimensions, right? It's another dimension, right?
Yeah.
But I guess the main contention, my main bone of contention, besides the dogs, my main bone of contention is that, like, what the fuck, what purpose does it serve? Why? Why does he need this army of undead ghoul little people? What do they do there? Their sole purpose is to just kidnap people to make more of them. I guess that's it, right? And then I guess at some point, the tall man just...
They did with the first movie, so I guess they just had to still go with it. It's like, we're gonna...
Maybe it's, a function of, like, we have to see all five movies, and maybe over time it is more explained, and, right, you know, they kind of, suss out what their function is, right? But as of these first two movies, it's kind of like, I don't know why they're doing this, but they love to do it.
I've seen the third one a few times, not as many times as I've seen the first one or the second one. I don't really remember exactly all the stuff that goes on. I just remember certain people with characters from the third movie.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe we'll get a bit of something like that. But before, I'm interested in seeing 4 or 5 just to see, like you said, whether they give any sort of explanation as to why they're doing that.
I mean, just give me some reason that why, you know, like, because this is clearly the main motivation. This is why he's stealing corpses from graveyards, by the way, in perfectly dug holes, right? Perfectly square, 6 foot down holes. Like, he's just taking all the bodies out of these graveyards and turning them into minions. I just like to know why. I don't know. But not to beat a dead horse, but it's just, that's a weird one with this series with me. But I do think they do a pretty good job of, like, seamlessly taking you from the first one to the second one, right? Even though they clearly didn't shoot some of that stuff back in the 70s. Like, right, they had to reshoot some of this, like, you know, Reggie grabbing Mike and jumping out of the window and stuff. Like, I think they did a good job of editing and shooting that to where, like, you didn't necessarily know that it wasn't the same kid, right? You know?
Hey, Michael. Actually, if it had been 10 years later, or 10 years, you know, from the time you saw the sequel, or the original.
Yeah. So I think there's some seamless editing going on there. And then you jump, like, what did they say, 7 years later when Mike is getting out of the institution. And okay, here's another one that kind of bugged me about this one. Why does Mike have this psychic connection to this girl Liz? Like, where did that come from and why? Just so they can instantly find each other and fall in love? Like, couldn't you have done a romantic side of this story without all the psychic bullshit? Like, what does that have to do with it? Once again, maybe it's further explained later on, but I doubt it. I can see by your lack of answers that...
I mean, yeah, like, I don't know where to begin.
Yeah.
I mean, it's still fun, though.
No, I'm not saying it's not. Yeah. I'm just picking nits. You know, I'm just picking the... I'm just showing you the kind of, like, what the fuck side of this movie. Like,
yeah,
these things don't make sense, you know, but that being said, I still enjoyed the fuck out of it. And we'll get into what I enjoyed in a minute, but that it seemed like it was there for no reason. If you want to give him a romantic, if you want to add that to it, and you, like Smoke, I think you've said a lot of times as movies back then, they really went out of their way to kind of add that element to these movies, right? I think that's clearly what they're doing. Did it have to be with the psychic connection for no reason?
If I had to guess, I would say maybe that Coscarelli was a huge fan of fantasy and that sort of supernatural type thing. Even the Phantasm series itself, you could say, is like horror fantasy. I mean, it's just as much fantasy as it is horror. Yeah. Like, if there's Alien, it's just as much sci-fi as it is horror. And, you know, he did Beastmaster and a ton of other movies in that fantasy realm. I think it was just that he enjoyed not having a straightforward storyline, you know, without injecting some sort of fantasy element in there. I mean, if I had to guess, I don't know for sure. I've never read or interviewed with, you know, him saying anything about that. But if I had to guess, that would be my guess.
Look at the runtime of the movie. Within the first 12 minutes of the movie, there's 2 house explosions.
That was a doozy of an explosion. And I think they said something about that house was going to get demolished anyway because there was a highway going through. Mm-hmm. That area, so let them blow the shit out of it, and they did.
Yeah. Also, I find it hilarious too that it's the same house in both parts. Like, they didn't blow up 2 houses; they blew up the same house and then filmed it from like 5 or 6 different angles. So then, when you see the house explosion at the beginning, it's the same house explosion 10 minutes later in the movie, just from a different angle, completely different house, quote unquote. 7 years apart.
I think they had to build it. story onto that house, right? Because the original house,
yeah.
I mean, for the story was supposed to be their house. It was a 2-story house in the first movie, so yeah. This house that was going to get demolished and they were going to use was only a single story. They had to build a whole story to blow that up.
How about we get the perfectly awesome 80s weapon montage?
That was pretty good.
What's up with that fucking shotgun? It's like a 4-barrel sawed-off shotgun.
And it's almost like it. Well, because it's almost like 2 double-barrel shotguns, like welded together.
Yeah, I mean it's visually a cool weapon.
Yeah, visually, but I think didn't they say something about? I forget why the reasoning was, but. But then they say something about you have to get in close quarters. You can't just shoot them from a distance or something. You have, like, so they use the chainsaw, right?
Yeah.
I think somebody says that. Mitch actually specifically says that, and they use a chainsaw.
I think the first...
And, yeah, I don't know why.
Once again, an unexplained part. Maybe it's somewhere in that 3-hour cut of the first movie. They explained everything perfectly. They just didn't bother to put it in any of the other ones to explain all this shit.
The actual thing of that gun, though, like, that gun wasn't sawed off. Straight, like the barrels weren't just sawed straight down. It was like at an angle,
mm-hmm.
like at 4 points. Was that scatter on that shotgun shell has got to be like, I don't know. It's going to go to the sides a little bit in the front. It's going to be. I mean, I don't know.
Oh, it'd have like a 10-foot spread, 10-15-foot spread on like 180, right? Boosh. I think one of the more The first gruesome things you see is when the girl, he sees a girl like cowering in the corner. He's like, do you need some help or, you know, whatever? And then this fucking demon comes out of her back. And it's the tall man, I guess, right? But kind of looks like a weird Freddy Krueger monster looking thing.
Yeah, that definitely reminds you of a scene from Nightmare on Elm Street, like 4 or 5 or something.
Some cool effects. And this might be a time to point out who did the effects in this one, right? Wasn't it... What's the name of that Kurtzman and
Nicotero?
Nicotero, yeah. What's the name of KMB? Isn't that
Art of?
Yeah. They did the effects, so I think that's one positive here, right? You got some really good, really good practical effects here, including the monster coming out of the back with the kind of weird modulated tall man voice. Bar, we're coming for you, bar. Whatever the fuck it says. I love when there's the subplot with Liz, you know, who he's psychically connected to, and her grandpa dies, and the grandma, though the priest, so they're at the funeral, the priest just goes over to the coffin and stabs grandpa in the chest. This has to end here, or whatever the fuck happened, right? He stabs it in the chest, and then he turns around, and the grandma's standing there, and then she just faints.
Probably another scene that the cat
probably. yeah, there you go. If you're making the Catholic, Why did they have a problem with this checklist? There's another one on the bingo card.
It's in the church, right? And stabbing the corpse.
I just like that. He just looks back like, uh-oh, and then she's, and just faints.
As you would do, I guess.
If you see the priest stabbing your fucking dead husband in the coffin, yeah, that'd probably be upsetting to all involved.
Something, that way do it.
Something so far I've noticed, another thing I've noticed in these first two movies is that Coscarelli, or just this franchise in general, just loves the fuck out of huge mausoleums.
Yeah.
Because they shoot the fuck out of the big marble, huge mausoleums.
And I assume for this one, he probably had to build it. Because like in the first one, remember, nobody would let him, I guess, shoot in a mausoleum. So he had to actually build a set of a mausoleum.
So, yeah. Because that's
like what he had to do.
Because I think I saw, you know, I think it's on IMDb or something where they always put the mistakes and goofs or whatever on there. I think I saw there's a scene in there where like somebody, I'm assuming Liz, one of the female characters, leans on a wall and the wall moves. But it's supposed to be a fucking mausoleum marble wall and it moves. Yeah, then you get the scene of the tall man, like we mentioned, hanging the priest by the necklace, you know, and the cross upside down and everything. I love that he keeps the spheres, you know, the flying balls, spheres, mm-hmm. whatever, in a tiny coffin. Because the side of it, like, they show this coffin, I'm like, oh, shit, it looks like a baby coffin. This is terrible. And then the side of it pops open and those spheres fly out.
Yep.
But boy, this is when you get your first really good gore scene, right, as the priest. That sphere flying through there.
Yeah.
Catching the...
Yeah.
First off, it cuts his ear off. You know, and they stick with it. Like, he's screaming. He's got his fucking ear cut off. And then it turns around and just catches him right in the forehead. Stabs him. like with the two knives in the forehead, and then a drill comes out and starts drilling into his head, and blood is just gushing out the other side of it.
So yeah, there's one place where that budget shines more so in this one in the first movie is those optical effects of the balls in this one.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah. And there's a lot of the effects in this one that you could tell the bigger budget, but it just looks better. Like, it's, you know, I know it's 9 years later from the first movie, right? And that's all I've got to compare it to so far. But, yeah, this one, the look of it is just way better than the first one for sure. Very satisfying first really big kill here, though, with the priest, right? This is what you pay your money for. That or the Reggie sex scene, the one that we talked about. you might have paid big money for that. If there's not a more unappealing couple that I wanted to see have sex in a movie, it's Reggie and Alchemy. There needs to be a category, Donnie. Mark it. There needs to be a category in the Spook Show Awards this year for worst sex scene.
Oh, man.
I think this might take it. This might take it already. Like, you know, I know we're only roughly half, you know, not even halfway through the calendar year. Maybe we are to the next Spook Show Awards, but this has got to take it. It's fucking horrible. Slapping him in the bald head and shit and laughing. It's just so stupid. Eventually Liz is kidnapped, and then the dude's about to throw her into the crematorium, like he's throwing her into the furnace, and then she just turns around and kicks him in the balls and hooks him in there. Now he's burning.
Well, what does it sound like?
I think I'm not a professional, but I think it sounded something like but what do I know? Then you get the next big sphere kill, where this thing drills is one of the, you know, faceless goons, right? The tall man's helpers, whatever they are, running around. It drills into his back and goes inside of him. And I'm thinking, like, this thing's gonna like blow out the other side. He's dead, right? No, this thing burrows up from like the small of his back all the way up to his mouth. And then eventually, like, you know, he turns around and you see it like sticking, it's sticking out of his mouth and like still drilling. Like, but this is some really cool practical effects, right?
Yeah.
Top-notch shit for sure. The chainsaw to the crotch.
That was awesome.
This is another thing that we got at least once a year in the 80s, right? There was going to be a movie where somebody's taking a chainsaw to the crotch in the 80s.
Another similarity with we mentioned Texas Chainsaw being 10 years, you know, between the first one and the sequel, this one being, well, 9 technically, but I think they promoted it as 10 years. There was also a crotch chainsaw scene in that sort. Well, more so an ass, right? The cook.
Yeah.
Got the chainsaw in the ass. Yeah.
But we get our final sphere to the head when one attaches, they kind of redirect it, and one attaches itself to the tall man's head. And he, instead of like the blood gushing out, he's getting like some kind of like fucking yellow goo type shit.
Yeah.
Coming out of his head, right? Because God knows what he is from some other dimension. But then a little bit beforehand, Reggie had poured some hydrochloric acid inside the embalming fluid. So then they stick that needle hose, whatever the fuck that is that you embalm bodies with, stick it into his back, and then pump him full of hydrochloric acid embalming fluid mix. So once again, effects gore, right? You get the fucking skin melting off of his muscles, and you know, his face melting and everything just from the acid and everything. So really cool, really cool visual effect there. But then you get it can't be Phantasm. I'm assuming that now after watching these first two, without a weird open-ended ending, right? They've won. They've took down the tall man, right? They're celebrating. They drive away in the hearse. Then Reggie's sitting in the front seat with Alchemy, and she turns around and she's like, "We won," or some shit, and then like pulls a big chunk of her hair. Just staring at him like, and pulls her fucking hair out, and there's a big chunk of her fucking scalp missing. And he's just like, "What the fuck?" And then they wreck. And then Liz and Mike are sitting in the back of the hearse. They're locked in. They can't get out. But they see Reggie kind of like all clawed up and shit in his face. He kind of like hits the back window. He's screaming and then kind of falls to the ground. And then the hearse takes off. I'm assuming Alchemy's driving it. But then the door, the little door between the front and the back opens back up, and it's the tall man who they thought they just took out. And he says something. I don't remember the final line, but it's something like, "This no." They're talking to each other, and he's like, "This is just a dream. Just remember, this is a dream." And he's like, "No, this is real," or something to that effect, right? And then that's the end of it. Now, that was another thing that I saw in those, I guess, in that work print cut, is that it better explains the ending in the sense of, like, there is a scene in there somewhere where, remember when they take out the tall man, and now all of a sudden another tall man appears, or, you know, the tall man reappears, right? When that work print cut, there is a scene in there where they take him out with the acid and he melts and everything, and then another tall man walks out of that dimensional portal, throws him in there, and now that explains why the tall man is back at the end. So, but yeah, there you go. That's the ending of this one, is that it leaves it wide open because you don't really know the status of Reggie, Mike, and Liz, right? They may or may not be dead, and the tall man is back, or they never took him out to begin with, and that's the way it ends. So, Phantasm 2.
And I said the third one, I don't know if it picks right up with that. We'll find out at some point.
Yeah, like I said, episode 305, book it 2 years from now,
100 more years.
Yeah
if we haven't if we still haven't finished Hellraiser,
yeah, we probably won't. Deanna, you brought it to the table, so we'll let you go first. What are your final thoughts and what's your star rating on Phantasm 2?
It's a good one. It's a fun one. Popcorn flick. Put on every once in a while. The gores. I mean, it probably was made a little bit earlier in the 80s, you probably would have gotten a lot more gore, I think.
Yeah,
it would have been probably more gore, maybe not as being a budget for the gore, but it probably would have been more.
Yeah.
I think that's fair.
You could say they probably would have poured more money into it, because Universal, like I said, they said this was the least amount of money they gave any movie they produced in the 80s. So maybe a couple years earlier, they might have put more money into it. Maybe it is more gory. Who knows? Maybe they're able to use that money a little more on the gore. Who knows?
The only thing that I was disappointed about was, that they didn't have the original mic in there. Mm-hmm. It would have been a little bit better. I'm not saying that the actor didn't do good, but it would have been better.
Yeah, especially knowing that they brought him, A. Michael Baldwin, back for the rest of them. So, continuity-wise, it's kind of this weird outlier, like, okay, And basically, like I said, all because Universal was like, nah, he's not a working actor these days. Let's use this guy.
Still, I guess it still made its money back, though, so that's good. Yeah. I give this one 2.5.
Now, before the, because Tiana, you weren't on there back then, so, it's not worth pointing out, but we did the first one back in episode 105, like we mentioned. Donnie, back then, just so it may or may not have a bearing on this one, you gave that one 3.25 stars. Smoke, you gave that one 3.5 stars, and Will and I both gave it 2.5 stars. So with that in mind, Donnie, what do you say about Phantasm 2?
All right. So the first, I am a fan of the first three, but, the first two are actually my favorites of the franchise, but I would say that, practical effects are always going to get a boost in the ratings for me, or at least in my ratings, which I know you guys basically kind of share the same sentiment. But so kind of where I am on this one, you said I gave the first one 3.25.
Yep.
I'm going to give it a flat 3 stars. This is certainly rewatchable for me, and for it to be rewatchable, it has, in my book, it has to be at least 3 stars, and that's where I'm at with this one.
Mug, what do you say?
Yeah, I definitely enjoy this one. It's, it kind of reminds me, this franchise, we talked about Hellraiser, the Phantasm franchise is not nearly as many movies as Hellraiser is, but I kind of feel, I hadn't seen the fourth and fifth Phantasm one, but the first three is kind of like Hellraiser, right? Like, I love the first two, and then the third one I kind of like. I like a good bit, but I haven't seen the third one in a while, Phantasm, so I can't really won't place that until we get to it. But I've always enjoyed the second one, except for the other things that have already been mentioned, like the original Mike, is not in it, but whatever. I mean, the guy did well enough trying to give, you know, any kind of negatives. We talked about the storyline, and yeah, things don't make sense, but you almost got to go with it like you do an Italian film, I guess.
Yeah. You're not
there's
wrong.
A lot of similarities to this as there are in some Italian, not the giallo so much, but in the Suspiria style movies of like nonsensical type stuff at the plot that you just need to go with, you know, kind of thing. So once you like abandon that and just go with it, you know, then the little Jawa things are just like, okay, well, that's just part of the franchise. You know, this is part of the quirks of Phantasm. Yeah, they're kind of like Star Wars influenced Jawas or whatever, but I mean, they make Phantasm, right? I can't think of any other movie that has that sort of thing just going for it. There's weirdness of, yeah, let's compact these corpses, these humans down into midgets and send them to our dimensional portal to the planet so we can enslave them for whatever reason.
Why? Who knows? Fuck it.
Just go. Yeah. Okay. So yeah, you got all that quirkiness is here again too, just like it was the first one. They got a bigger budget, but for me personally, I like that. I love the feel of the first movie. Maybe it just has to do with it being in the 70s still, the tail end, the 70s going into the 80s. It's just, it has its own like thing too. And the budget doesn't really deter it for me. It's cool that the second one had more of a budget because at least they're not doing the exact same thing as they did the first movie. Yeah, they pushed forward and I could watch it, you know, and I have watched it multiple times. So I get a lot of entertainment out of it. So for that, those reasons, I'll go with the same Echo Donnie's 3, I think, or the 3-star.
Myself, I for as many times as I complained, you know, earlier about certain things that were just stupid to me, goofy, I still enjoyed it, you know, and like you said, it is endearing because of the kind of goofy, silly stuff, you know, aspects of it. I think I kind of said the same thing about the first one, although that one didn't make any fucking sense, to be honest with you. It was, you know, this one didn't make a whole hell of a lot of sense, but I think it made more sense that, you know, that makes sense. Made more sense than the first one did. I could follow it easier. And I think I had a little bit more fun with this one. So I'm actually going to rate this one slightly higher than I did the first one, believe it or not. I gave that one 2.5. I'm going to give this one 2.75 stars. So I'm right behind y'all.
Yeah.
I don't know if my appreciation runs as deep for this because this just wasn't a series that I watched, you know, when I was younger. So I guess for that reason, it just, you know, it doesn't ring with me as well as, you know, some other ones that we watched, but I still enjoy the hell out of it. And there was some top notch gore in this one. You know, it comes in spurts. There's not a lot of it, but when you get it, it's pretty good. Great effect.
Oh yeah. Comes in spurts.
So you still enjoy it, right? Yeah, so I mean, I have fun with it, and I guess at the end of the day, that's all that matters, even though certain aspects of it make no fucking sense and never will. So enjoy it for what it is. So I guess for now, we'll sit at 2.8 out of 5 stars. So we clearly recommend you go check it out. It probably isn't going to be top-notch on anybody's list, but I think you'll enjoy it if you like that. For people that like this kind of thing, that's the kind of thing these people like. Right? So, Donnie, we'll toss to you first.
Just let it play out.
Mm-hmm.
All right, so yeah, you kind of alluded to this earlier. On the cast side, Angus Grimm played the tall man. He was also in Chopping Mall. He played like one of the in the beginning, where I say kind of like the beginning in Chopping Mall. I guess they had like a press conference with the investors and, some of the scientists. Yeah, he played one of the scientists.
Okay, there you go.
And then on the crew side, makeup effects creator Greg Nicotero has been in more Spook Show episodes than basically anybody. So that's why I don't have Robert Kurtzman listed here, because Nicotero has been in more. I'm sorry. So the past Spook Show episodes would be The Green Inferno, Annabelle, Invasion USA, Dr. Giggles, Evil Dead 2, The Book of Eli when we did the summer disaster last year, and actually your favorite, Josh, Ghost of Mars.
Oh, fuck you. that's an eclectic, weird mix of stuff, though, that you just, you know.
Right?
They throw an Invasion USA in the middle of that. Like, huh?
Sure.
No, but yeah. He's had a hell of a career. He's probably one of those names that, like, if you know, you know. But, like, not everybody knows that he can make all those connections. So, you know, probably somebody that should be more revered for his work you know, for all these last 40 something years than he should be, you know, really.
Oh, yeah.
Or than he has been, I should say. Will doesn't do, you know, he's barely around anymore. So we've handed the kill count over to Tiana. So, Tiana?
Yeah, so there were 10 actual people that were killed. One rat. And there was 33 dwarves in total.
So it, maybe discounting the rat, if you throw in the people, that was 43, I think?
Yeah. And then they even said, it even said that one of the spear balls was crushed by the tall man.
Boy, that's really just throwing everything.
Yeah, that's
everything in the kitchen sink in there.
Just throwing it, I guess. Yeah.
Which I get, you know, if you're going to count the rat, you have to count whatever the fuck got blown up by the grenade, right? Like, they didn't even know. Apparently they had a cat or a dog. We don't know. So it got blown up by the grenade. So you just didn't see it.
Yeah, a lot of the dwarves got killed, so.
Well, that naturally leads us to,
let's talk about the kill reel.
I like kill.
You know, this is a tough one, but I think there was one really, I think to me, there was one that stood out a little bit more than the rest. I'm going to go with the second guy that gets the random dude that gets taken out by the sphere where it drills into his back and works its way up to his mouth. I think that, and that priest one was really good too, you know, with the catching it in the forehead and the blood squirting out for a couple minutes there. That was pretty good too, but I think I'm going to go with the guy catching it in the back and all the way through the mouth. That was pretty, you know, pretty good work, pretty gruesome shit. So I think we got a natural winner here for Smoke.
Gore score.
Yeah, that was a great kill that you picked on there too, and it adds into the gore score factor, of course. Also, that I thought it was a nice little kicker that they had the little blade things making that sound and like,
yeah.
They could have been the thing sitting there and like it would have been in the past. I mean, depending on that's the difference between having somebody like Tom Savini or Greg Nicotero or whatever who was trained by Tom Savini. When you could just do a gore effect, or you could do these little things that add quirkiness to that effect that really make you remember it later, you know.
Yeah.
The difference between somebody like just stabbing, you know, showing a knife stabbing, where you see somebody go lunge and then you see a faint knife or whatever sticking out of somebody's belly, right, as they lay down on the ground. Or you have Tom Savini who's like, oh, I'm gonna put this knife through you, then I'm gonna cut away and I'm gonna come back with another one that the blade's a little bit shorter on, and then, you know, so it makes it look like the knife is going through somebody's head. All these different things really make a production whenever you got talented, like special effects makeup artists like that work on them, like you did on this movie. So even though the MPAA, they had to go back and forth with it and get some of that gore trimmed down, there's still a good bit of gore in this movie. Unfortunately, though, I wish that they would have been able to put an uncut version out there of that word print type stuff, put back, you know, all that gore that was in there, put back in the movie. But I guess that doesn't exist in any kind of finished form. So unfortunately, it's not in here. But what we do get, I'm going to defer to Chad, the namesake of the gore score, of course, Paz Balin. And he did have this movie in his various publications, Deep Red, the Deep Red Horror Handbook, and probably in one of the Deep Red magazines. And what he gave it was a 7. So I think I'm gonna stick with Chaz's score on that as well myself. So, I'll give it a gore score of 7. Which is pretty surprising considering, like I said, how much the NBA they had to go back and forth and get some trim out. I guess it probably would have gotten a little bit higher if we could get that uncut cut of the movie. But
yeah, I think so. I mean, because I think you get plenty of gore here, but it, like I said, it happens in spurts, right? Like it's not balls to the wall. It's not nonstop, you know, but the moment you get it is great and there's a lot of it, but it's only a few moments of high gore, right? So 7's probably fair. Well, that's it. That's where we'll leave the Phantasm series for now. And I'm sure we'll get to it in the next 100 episodes or so, Phantasm 3. But until then, next week, we're going to have our next Spook Show Spotlight episode. Now, we're going to be talking about, if you recall, maybe longtime listeners might, I think it was around 2 years ago or so, we did, what was it called, Donnie? Like History of Home Video, Part 1, where we just talked about the beginnings of home video and how it got started, the format wars between VHS and beta and all that, you know, we got into all that stuff. The key word there was part one, because we have a part two coming, and this may or may not be part two, but it's going to be tied into that. We're hoping, we've lined up an interview, and we're going to be talking to author Corey J. Gorski, who wrote the book VHS Collecting, The Modern Relevance of Home Video. So hopefully we're able to get him on. That's the plan, to talk about his book and just to talk about, you know, people that collect VHS and, you know, and there's a lot of history there in his book about how it kind of led up to where it is today, you know, as far as like people going back and finding the old lost media, right? So we're going to take a deep dive into that one way or the other next week. That's going to be our next episode, episode 206. And then after that, it's going to be Will's choice in the rotation, and he hasn't quite made it yet. So we'll let you know, hopefully next week, what that's going to be, and lots planned in the weeks and months to come. So for Will, could be with us, Donnie, Tiana, the Professor Smoke, I'm Josh. We are the All-American Spook Show, and we'll talk to you next week.
As you leave the theater, folks, please be careful. Don't let this happen to your car. Be sure to remove the speaker before you leave. If you should accidentally pull a speaker loose, please turn it in at our snack bar or box office. Thank you.